talking last class about coupling two qubits, and we had, of course, a range of coupling interactions that we could put between the qubits, but the one we want to talk about today is where we mediated by an actuator. So we have our qubit. And there's no direct coupling between the qubits. The only couplings are via the actuator. And it doesn't matter too much what the couplings are, but just to keep things compact, we can take and look at the exchange interaction between the actuator and the qubits. And of course, we've seen repeatedly that we can write that interaction in the Cartesian basis. And if we look at the commutator of those, then we see that in this second order, in this perturbation analysis, the actuator couples the two qubits. And if we put a frequency here and moved on resonance with those. So if we made the coupling to the same, then we showed, well, I didn't actually show it, but I told you that you could have a direct exchange of interaction. And it's easy to simulate, and you can see that if I have an excitation here, it will move to an excitation here. Okay. And the other nice piece is if we drive the actuator. So the actuator, of course, we don't want information to reside on the actuator. What we want is we want the information to move between the two qubits and to be enabled by the location of the actuator. But in fact, if you imagine that we were always projecting the actuator into the ground state, so that we would limit the amount of information that was on it, that we would still want that interaction to occur. A way that, and the commutator allows it. Another way of doing it is to apply a Ravi drive to the actuator, which is matched for this coupling between the two qubits, and then in that basis as well, these two become coupled. And so, not only can we couple via an actuator, but of course we can also, therefore, on demand turn on and off that coupling. I can couple when I want them. And one of the ways of thinking about this, of, you know, why use the actuator? Why not just put the two qubits close together and couple them? I want the qubits to hide their information from everything. What I like is the qubits to have some small moment, whether it's dipole or electric moment, that they're not going to see anything. Right? The strength with which they see the outside world depends upon the strength of that moment. The actuator, of course, could have a big moment because I don't care that the environment sees it because I'm not putting any coherence there. And so we can use this actuator to enable a gate which would otherwise be too slow or too sensitive to environments. But now what I want to do today is to change this picture. So we're still going to have our two qubits. I want to replace the actuator. So here we were imagining the actuator as a two-level system. And now I want to replace that with harmonic oscillator. And it's easy to make harmonic oscillators. So, and of course, many things act as harmonic oscillators. Of course, that's the bane of physics, right? Any local minimum, we immediately map onto a harmonic oscillator and forget to think about. But we can either make this electrically, or we can make mechanical oscillators that look like it. Or, of course, we could take local modes. And if I look at that, again, I want the qubits to not couple directly. I want them only to couple to the harmonic oscillator. So we can start by looking at the James-Cumming model. Which is going to describe the coupling of one qubit to a kappa. And it's a model that probably you've seen before, but let's write it down. So it has the cavity mode. It has a piece for the qubits, which in this case is only one, and it has a coupling oscillator, the qubit energy, the coupling strength between them, and of course, the coupling is going to say, oh, I'm going to exchange an excitation. We normally think that excitation will be a photon of some sort, but it could be a phonon. It's any excitation. And it says, oh, yes, put an excitation from the cavity to the qubit, or here, put your excitation from qubit to cavity. And it's easy to see in this model, and it's going to be a reoccurring theme today, that the good quantum number is the excitation, right? So the excitation number is a good quantum number here. So we have our system, which is two levels, omega A, and then we have our harmonic oscillator. Physics here, but it's fortunately a physics which is easy to solve completely and generally, and goes back to the Dress States picture that was introduced by Cohen Tanuji. But the only piece that I really want to look at is the on resonance case, where the energy splitting of the qubit and the energy splitting of the harmonic oscillator are equal. And of course, in that case, then this term is going to be important. Okay? And I want to take a quick digression just to remind you of a related piece of physics that you already know. So if we look at two qubits and they have a coupling, and I take this scalar and I expand it, like so, and of course this is just an energy term, so we don't need to worry about it. This piece is, again, the so-called flip-flop term, and you will agree with me that although the element of the flip-flop term commute with the sum of sigma z, they don't commute with the difference of sigma z. In other words, if there's an energy difference between the two qubits, then if I exchange them, it costs me energy. And therefore, that term can't be secular. Yep. Just to write it down, of course, sigma z plus sigma z prime does commute. And so as we take delta omega towards zero, then we see a mixing of the Zeeman energy bases. So that when delta omega is large, then the eigenstates are correctly the Zeeman states. And the sum of sigma z is a good quantum number. And then as omega c, as this goes to zero, then we fall into the triplet and singlet. So we end up with the spin 1, 0. So the triplet piece. And of course, the spin 0, 0 state, the singlet state, right? And I would rewrite this as saying that I had two new eigenstates, which are like that. And theta is the arctan of the ratio of the coupling to the energy difference. Right? Good. We're going to do the same thing here. Okay? So in this case, as this term becomes large, we end up with the Dress states. And the Dress states are going to be combinations now of these states. And so I'm going to end up, let me write it here. I'm going to end up having a set of Dress states that are going to become combinations of those. And there'll be one state hanging out down here that says you have no excitation. Now, if I have no excitation, I don't have to specify that I have no excitation in which of the two subsystems. I simply have no bloody excitation, right? So this state says that I have no excitation. But these states are going to say, well, I have one excitation. And, you know, normally we would think, well, we should say it's an excitation of the atom, or we should say it's an excitation of the cavity. But the energy of the atom and the cavity are the same. So from the excitation point of view, you're not allowed to specify. So let's write it down.
What about the fourth thing?
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean, in the, if you're mixing the 1 and the 0 with the 1 and the 0, which you get 4, like, with 1 foot.
I'm not going to miss anything. I promise you. So the conventional way of writing these is like this. So obviously, this is our harmonic oscillator, and this is our qubit. And there's an energy difference given there. So there's a splitting of these two energy levels. And that splitting is given by 2g the square root of n. Okay, so now let's make sure that we can write these down. So we have our state sitting out here. And don't worry about where the zero point energy is for all of this stuff, because I'm not going to worry about it. So then we would end up in trouble. So we've got two states here that are split. They're split by twice g. And of course, we've got the state 1 minus and 1 plus. And then we're going to have up here another two states. And they're split by 2g square root of 2. And they continue up, right? 2 plus and 2 minus. And so if I write out, you know, we look at the n equals 1 state, then we'll have the state 1 over the square root of 2. Like so. Okay, so we get a nice simple structure of this. And you know, you can see that we haven't lost any states out of that. Okay. Good. So now then we've got this coupling to the cavity. And what you're going to do in your tutorial today is you're going to look at using this particular coupling to implement a gate. And this cavity coupling, and the way I want you to think about this is really sort of a black and white picture, just to make finding a way forward easy. So you say, either the cavity and the qubit are on resonance, in which case I'm living in this manifold, or I diabatically go to a case where the cavity and qubit are off resonance and g is effectively zero. Right, so we go to a system that we have two separated quantum systems. Now, of course, you could integrate this and do anything you wanted, but in an hour and a half, doing the other will be much more effective. Now, you can use the cavity, of course, to control the qubit. You can also use the cavity to cool, but we're not going to talk about that because of dissipation. But you can use the cavity to couple qubits. And this is the one I want you to think about. And so we need another cavity, another qubit. And if you're using the James Cunning model, then the way you would want to do this is to say, I have a qubit with some frequency of another qubit with some other frequency, and I'm going to move the cavity frequency to this or to that, and that these two are not equal to each other. Yeah?
This is like buttons in an ion trap, right?
What's that?
Is this buttons in an ion trap?
So ion traps you can do this way.
Right.
So it's... there are more efficient ways. We're going to talk about in just a second. But, you know, if you thought about this and you said, oh, this is an ion trap or and the harmonic oscillator is emotional oscillation, or you said, no, this is this flux qubit and the harmonic oscillator is a real cavity, or you said, oh, no, man, this is a spin system and the harmonic oscillator is a cantilever. You know, we could go on for the rest of the lecture. So all of those physics are going to be exactly the same. Unfortunately, if you went and you read the literature, it would all write the Hamiltonian a little bit differently and use a completely orthogonal set of jargon, just to keep you guys guessing.
So if we're going to play around with this model,
yeah,
I mean, I can see how you can kind of mix around the states, but I don't see how you need some other way of actually introducing excitations in the first place. Or do you just start with one and just assume you've seen that?
So you can, you know how to use, how to work with a qubit?
Yeah.
So you'll be good. Okay. I mean, it's not my role to solve your tutorial in the lecture.
No, I'm saying, like, are we just sticking with that Hamiltonian up there? Like, we can't add anything else?
No, you can add.
Okay.
You know, physics is freedom, right? Okay. Now then, let's look at coupling these two. So the way I'd like to do it now is to say, I don't want this model. I would like to have a model where I have a qubit frequency and a qubit frequency and a cavity, and the cavity frequency is equal to the qubit frequency. I have the same G on each side. And this system is described by the Travis Cummings Hamiltonian. And in this case, well, you can see that I've made the system symmetric. So you must live in the symmetric subspace. So there's nothing, so all I'm going to do, I'm not even going to write it down, is I'm going to add exactly another qubit there. I'm not going to couple the two qubits. And I'm going to give you a symmetric by making G and omega the same. It turns out, it's not hard to see, that if you added a qubit-qubit interaction in this case, you wouldn't change anything. So that would be a small shift in energy, but everything would commute. So we could even add something here, but there's no benefit that I know of to adding it, and there's only the challenge of being that much more complicated. And so now we end up with an eigenstructure. That looks almost the same, except that we need to write it in terms of the collective eigenstates. So we're going to write it in terms of Jz over the qubits. And of course, I'm describing two, but it could be any number. It's always going to be collective. And once again, as I promised you, the number of excitations is going to remain a good quantum number. And so when we write down the states, this Jz is the spectrum of the values of the collective quantum number. So if I had two qubits, it could take on values of plus 1, 0, and minus 1. So basically, as we write down these eigenstates, all we're doing is to say, how many ways are there of moving around a single excitation between them? So as we go up on the board, all we're doing is adding excitations. And because we have a larger effective Hilbert space in this place, then of course there's more than two duress states, right? So if I was to redraw that duress states picture, I would have to keep increasing the number in the dressing. And that's what I'm showing here, so that these are the duress states, and these are the energy separations between them. Okay. Good. Now, this system is a drag to solve for the dynamics outside of the first excitation manifold. So it's not that it's easy enough just to say what the structure is for this piece of it. Right? And this, of course, is just a piece of the structure, because I've written down just the fully symmetric, right? The full Hamiltonian and spanned by everything. Yeah. Okay. This, you'll find, we get control exactly the same as what we started off in the upper left-hand corner. If I limit myself to one excitation, if I limit myself to one excitation, then of course the harmonic oscillator is going to look like a spin 1/2 particle. And so we'll end up there. Okay. Now, that's not quite versatile enough. That gives us a lot of control. And here, of course, you can imagine that you have a lattice of identical qubits, and you move your Hamilton, your cavity to couple to them. In fact, there are proposals where you physically move this to go around and couple those. Maybe not the easiest to implement. But if you wanted to keep building complexity, which if you're building a quantum computer, you better do, then we can also couple cavities. And keep adding words. So I'll add the word Hubbard from the Hubbard model to this. And so now our Hamiltonian is going to be the sum of some frequency of some harmonic oscillator. And I don't know why all of a sudden I drop zero point energy. There was no reason for that. Plus a sum of the qubit frequencies, plus a sum over the couplings, plus a sum over the couplings between the cavities. And here again, if I take and say that the excitations in the cavity systems are just the sum over those number operators, and if I say the excitations over the spin system is just the sum of the excitations in the spin system, and you'll remember that E plus is just sigma plus sigma minus. So it's easy to see the correspondence, and then that the total Hamiltonian commutes with the sum of those, and therefore we can write out a Dresdaites picture. But just as I had to expand it here to take into account the excitation in the two equivalent qubits, here I would have to take into account the excitation in the two equivalent harmonic oscillators. So we'd end up with the same set, same hierarchy of just whether the excitation is sitting in one oscillator or another, or the atoms.
Okay. For the coupling, do you need two sets of indices here? In that, so we'd say psi in the couplings with sigma.
Here?
Yeah.
No, I don't, but it's a really good question. So here, the model that we're thinking about is to have a row of cavities, and there's a qubit sitting in the cavity. And so the coupling of the qubit to the next cavity would never be direct. Yeah? But you
still need, for the A's, you need the I index, because you couple within one cavity.
So here, we're imagining that we have one cavity, one coupling, one qubit. So and that's what this Hamiltonian is. So then, you know, we could say that we have the James Cumming Hubbard Holger Hamiltonian. We could add another index. All you have to do is find something interesting with it. So this, you know, the James Cumming, that's good. You know, you get that first year quantum mechanics and you can solve it. The Travis Cummings, if you limit yourself to a single excitation, you're good. You can solve it. The James Cumming Hubbard model, well, okay. that's a little bit harder. And you can see things like Mach transitions in this system. They have been shown experimentally going back to the 80s of Mach transitions in these systems. And so there's, as you'd expect, there's collective dynamics in this system. And so there's emergent physics which are hard to deal with. You know, if you leave yourself in one dimension, you can still do a lot here. You try to go beyond that, you're in trouble. Yeah.
If I take a like a fixed excitation, so, you know, as I fix a number of excitations in this system,
yeah,
I don't really get. I mean, the number of states is not like 2 billion. It's not like, I mean, if I just for even for like the Travis Cummings one, if I just have like one excitation assist and it's got three places it could be, so it's a three-dimensional.
That's right. So here, if you have one excitation, right, then it can be. So let's just leave ourselves there, right?
Yeah.
So then we would have four possibilities, yeah. Right?
So that will be, so is that what you want your two qubits to be?
That's right.
But then if I went to a third one, I'd have only six with one excitation.
So you have to be careful of saying that your qubit is not your excitation, because
right.
This goes back to this unary structure, right? There would be only one way of getting there, and so you would find that you couldn't do universal quantum computing if your qubit was the excitation number.
Yeah. But you're allowing. I mean.
But if your qubit is a qubit, you're good.
Okay, but you are allowing for like. Excitations to enter and leave the harmonic oscillators from somewhere else?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we'll come back to that in just a second. So this is really just the structure of this.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I said, can I build a quantum computer out of just one of these Hamiltonians and nothing else, you come back and say, hey, how do I get universality? And of course, you know, just looking at this one for a second, you know, no way in hell do we get universality, right? We're limited ourselves to the fully symmetric subspace.
Another quick question.
Yeah.
So in this James Cummings Hubbard model, you've got like it's kind of second order couplings. You're going from qubit to qubit. You've got to pass through two oscillators. Does that reduce the effective coupling term or
no?
Okay.
You weren't here yesterday, but just like in that piece,
yeah.
You can go into an interaction frame, and although it appears that you've generated your dynamics, you know, your generator comes from a commutator. You say, well, it's only going to show up in second order. But in an interaction frame, you can make that first order. Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. I want to quickly change gears completely and talk about just a physical implementation of quantum error correction so that I can set up a problem for you. Okay, so we've got this, you know your controls, but now completely change tacks and think about the simplest approach to quantum error correction. So I have some initial qubit, some state I want to keep. And I'm going to code this just for sigma x errors. So a sigma x error can flip that bit, right? So under sigma x, this can go to 0, 1 plus beta 0. And we're going to allow ourselves two ancillas and two control NOT gates. And so we will go from to the potentially entangled state. Okay, so it depends on what your choice of alpha and beta are, if that actually is an entangled state. But you have this correlated state that shows up here. And we're going to allow noise. And the noise has four options. The hopefully most likely result of noise is that nothing's happened. But it can also flip the first, the second, or the third qubit. And then following that, we're going to decode the state with just the inverse of the coding. And since it's exactly just the inverse, if there was no noise, this state goes back to where it was. If the first qubit is corrupted, then this would go to 111 plus 011. And so we would end up, if the first bit, if the first qubit had been flipped, we would end up with an error in our system, but labeled by the state of those in silico. And similarly, if the second one is flipped, then we end up in the correctly, in the correct state, labeled, and finally, if the third qubit was flipped, we end up again in the subspace. And so if I look at the state here, and I just look at it as a density matrix, then in the subspace 0, 0, we have our initial state. In the subspace 0, 1, we have our initial state. In the subspace 1, 0, we have the original one. But in the subspace 1, 1, we have sigma x times the initial state. And of course, the probabilities here are, this is the probability that there was a flip of the first spin, the probability that there was a flip of the second spin, the probability that there was a flip of the third spin, of course, the rest of the probability, provided I give you a promise that only one thing happened. Yeah. And the reason that quantum error correction works is that we've moved into overlapping, to non-overlapping regions of Hilbert space, and we can address each of these separately. And so we can approach this by saying, oh, let me make a measurement of the ancilla. Then in this instance, I will know in which of these subspaces I'm in. And I'll know that if I'm in the first three, I've correctly returned the state. If I'm in the fourth one, then I know that this state was corrupted, but it was corrupted by a sigma x operation. And so I can apply a sigma x operation to undo that, since, of course, sigma x squares to the identity. Okay? The other way of thinking about this is that, well, I don't, in fact, need to measure this. That I could also implement, a gate, which would be conditioned on being in that part of the Hilbert space. So I could say, oh, yes, let's simply correct it. And then I would still need, in either case, but we'll talk about this one, throw away this data. So that I could collapse back down to a 2x2 Hilbert space, and I have a qubit which has restored, where we've restored the purity of the qubit, and we can proceed. Okay? And so you can see that, yes, we need local qubits because we need to do this local control. We need to be able to do the control fast compared to the rate of errors, so that there's only a linear number of errors. It'll always be the case that we want to be able to put our information in non-overlapping parts of the Hilbert space so that we can go back and, without knowing what the state is, be able to correct the errors, that we have a label, this is what the error was. All right. Now let me explain why I said all that. So since tomorrow's a holiday, meaning you have the whole day uninterruptedly to work on physics, what I want to do is I want to take all of the pieces we've given you and to say, here's all the pieces. Now you come up with an interesting architecture. Okay? And the idea isn't for you to come up with the correct architecture, because we have no way of knowing what the correct architecture is for a quantum computer. The idea is for you to say, if we take and combine these elements, then we'll be able to achieve this set of physics. Okay? And I'm not looking for proofs. I'm looking for inspiration. So let's put down, you know, what we need, what we can do. So I'm gonna, just because of my background, start with nuclear spins, which you don't have to use, but it's inconceivable to me you wouldn't. So nuclear spins have long coherence. So we'll call it minutes, could be hours, could be days. And we can control via an electron at a rate of 10 megahertz. If I'm not controlling via an electron, that rate drops down to kilohertz. And so, yes, you can make something out of those. But, you know, the goal of making a quantum computer is not only that it scales faster, scales better than a classical computer, but that it also it would complete a computation in your lifetime. So if you take the clock speed down to 100 hertz, no one's going to buy your quantum computer. We have electron spins. So here we have fast control. So 100 megahertz. We have coherence of 100 milliseconds. We have a reset via a cavity in 10 microseconds, and we can read out via an NV in 10 milliseconds. So if I reset it, that means I go to the ground state. But I didn't learn what state it was in. I just went to the ground state. So resetting is a great way of getting rid of entropy. But if I want to read, it takes a little bit longer. And for the electron spin, each electron can control 8 nuclear spins. And if you want to reset the nuclear spins, you have to do that via the electron. You can't reset the nuclear spins or read out the nuclear spins themselves. But the nuclear spins can hold information.
Can you have to reset all eight at the same time?
No. You can reset any of you have universal control between those two. An NV allows one electron spin to be red. It needs 10 microns cubed of space. So let's put squared, because we're only going to build processors in two dimensions. The coherence time is a millisecond, and the reset time is one millisecond. That's actually long. Let's put 0.1 milliseconds. But it's reset to 95%. So unfortunately, we don't reset to. This is a molecule. So the size is a nanometer.
How can you read out an electron spin to an NV in 10 milliseconds if the coherence time of the NV is 10 milliseconds?
You can keep cycling through, and you have nuclear spins that hang on to it, onto the information.
Okay.
So yeah, it's a funny piece, but you can do that. The cavity. Oh. And this needs a confocal microscope, so you have to give yourself some room. But that's not so important. Cavity. So this can couple electrons. So it's 1 centimeter in length. And the G is equal to 0.1 megahertz for an electron, and it's equal to 10 megahertz for a superconducting qubit. Good. So a superconducting qubit this can insert one excitation. The coherence time is 100 microseconds. The time to measure is 10 milliseconds. And the reset time is 100 microseconds, and it's to 99%+. And it needs 100 microns squared, but it also needs 4 wires. Okay?
How is your measurement, again, how is your measurement time longer than the coherence?
Because the coherence time says, what's the time to collapse to a fiducial state? So think about you're measuring a qubit, so it has some coherence. The first thing that happens is it collapses to a fiducial state, and then you keep sampling that fiducial state.
Okay,
yeah. And of course, you know, you get the probability out, right? Or you get a result that is given by a probabilistic. Okay, so here, what I'd like you to do, and I don't know if we can schedule this, what I'd like to do is to say, okay, let's find a day where we have an hour or so next week and come with some suggestions of an architecture to say, oh, yes, we could build a quantum computer by having some array of these things coupled by cavities with these things to inject. And if we built it in this way, you know, it looks like the information would flow and we could do error correction. And since the only thing, you know, we design quantum computers because we said, oh, we can do physics simulation or we can do Schwarz algorithm, read everyone's email, be real happy about that. But the only thing your quantum computer is actually going to do is run error correction. You know, there might be a little bit of bandwidth left over for something else, but really your quantum computer runs error correction. And so as you think about your quantum computer, say, ah, can I do this? Right? If you can do this, then maybe you can do some other things as well.
Yeah, because I mean, like this thing in here, what you've got with the noise,
yeah,
it's like you've gone through this complicated circuit just to get back with what you started.
Yeah, that's right. So I mean, we remember that I'm going to change your words a little bit. We go through this complicated circuit to get back to where we started without having any information at all about where that was. Mm-hmm. And that's the requirement for quantum error correction,
yeah,
right?
Totally.
If you pick up any information about where you started out, you're dead. Okay? So I think that's all the parameters you need. I do think, you know, that the piece that would be nice to see is some two-dimensional layout. You say, well, if I lay things out this way, then we would be able to do that. Okay? And is there some moment next week or the week after that we can get together for an hour and
so
chat?
There's still another course that will be on next week, so
yeah,
it might be difficult to just but I guess we can discuss with the tutorial and see if
yeah, if there's interest, you know, we can provide beer and a blackboard.
I meant most of us are only taking one or zero. Oh, Tom is gone, right?
I'm away next week on Tuesday, so if we do it either Monday or probably a week after, the rest for me, but other than that, I'm completely free.
And then a lot of the rest of us are probably taking a class, and so we'll have some tutorials, but probably not every day, because I doubt anybody is taking two or more.
I mean, currently, I think the tutorials will probably run, like, two on Monday, two on, like, say, Tuesday and Thursday, one on, like, Monday and Wednesday. So it'll be one day that's completely free and one day that's got, like, 3 hours off anyway, so.
So we can talk about it in the tutorial and see if we can help with it.
Yeah.
Good.
We'll have some.
So I hope it would be fun, you know, give you a chance to say, can we bring this information together and be creative about where we could take it?
Do you allow for layered designs as well, so like to see the arrays on top of it?
If people want to get complicated, everything's open. If you're proposing to build that as part of your PhD, you're going to add it. but good. Okay, then we stop. Thanks much.